Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday. It's the 31st of August. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. Let me introduce our panel to you. Before we do that, though, Alan and I would both like to thank everyone in the area and our listeners and our wonderful audience for the outpouring of support that we had yesterday for our fund drive for those affected by Hurricane Harvey and the tropical storm hitting the Gulf Coast. $325,000 and counting. So,
and Joe, the word we keep hearing again and again in everybody's comments, and we're assembling them, community, 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 community. This is what a community does together. It's amazing.
All very good, and we thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts, and obviously a lot more work to do for all parties involved, but glad that we could do that yesterday, and we welcome you to our program this morning, where we'll discuss that storm and many other issues as well. Let me introduce our panel to you. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She would have been here yesterday, but she was here yesterday. She was answering telephones. So we thank you for doing that, and then we thank you for being here as a panelist this morning.
Well, it was so delightful to be able to answer those phones yesterday. The people were amazing, and the kindness. I was so struck by the kindness and how people kept saying, thank you for giving us the opportunity to do this. And the other thing that struck me, I got several calls from people who had been victims of Irene. And, you know, they had said, you know, they had their own experiences of flooding and they wanted to give back. So, but it was an amazingly uplifting experience. You know, put all the politics aside, put everything aside and just, you know, this is what's right about America. I know I'm mushy about this, but it was really uplifting. It was beautiful.
And if anybody really doubts that, you got to go back and get Tocqueville, Democracy in America. You will see. This is one of the things when he first came over here that he identified, which was what he called the spirit of voluntarism that sets this country apart.
Right.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for creating the opportunity.
And thank you for being this morning. Joe Bonilla is with us this morning as well. He's a communications consultant. We are thrilled to have him on our program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be with you this morning.
Very nice to have you here. And Alan, as always, thank you. What are you doing this Sunday night?
Oh, you're a good man, Joe. You are as good a man as there ever was. Okay, so the Berkshire I didn't even know what you were talking about. The Berkshire Ramblers.
And what are they?
Yeah. They are an unlikely group of folk singers who get together. And the band has so many ringers now that we are terrific. My friend Joe Brody and I were playing together since Camp Bronx House, of all places. We do an end of the summer closeout on Labor Day Sunday, and it'll be you call 413-528-1955. It'll be sold out. I'm telling you that now. It will be sold out. And a lot of people say to me, "Well, you didn't tell me when you were going to be there. I missed it." Okay, you want to do it now. There are a few seats left. 528-1955, 413-528-1955, But don't come crying to me later on. Don't be coming crying to me. That there are no seats left. Because
there's no crying in Berkshire Ramblin'.
That's right.
Crying. That's without the N at the end.
Crying, there must be
There's no ing at the end of crying.
Can we mention, I don't know, I think we mentioned it, but it's at the church.
At Arlo's Church, of all places.
Yes, it is so, at the Guthrie Center.
If you've seen Alice's restaurant, that's the church. And he bought it, and for years they've been doing great, great work. George Lay, proprietor.
And you'll be playing the?
All the great songs from Pete we got banjos, guitars, Michael Ick, Don McGrory, you name it. This is a Moonshine Holler is part of the band. It's just great.
All right. Well, with all of that said, let's...
Thanks for asking, though, Joe.
You're very welcome. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will get started with the issues of the day. And we'll be back right after this. morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday, the 31st of August. My brother's birthday, so happy birthday, Patrick.
Happy birthday. You have so many brothers that, you know, the whole calendar must be taken up.
You know, we are a stereotypical Irish Catholic family.
No, how many kids are there? How many boys are there?
There are five.
Five boys?
Yeah.
And?
Five boys, and then a lot of wives and children and, you know, all that stuff. So, but Pat's was close, and so I wish him a happy birthday this morning. What else? Oh, here's the thing. So we want to talk about this chemical plant, and we were just talking during the break. There's so many environmental issues that are coming out of this, and we heard much of this during the fun drive yesterday about climate change and its effect on the storm and so forth. Just a quick reminder that Judith Enck, former EPA administrator, regional administrator, will be with us tomorrow and has a lot of thoughts on this. I know she was all over the national media yesterday. She'll be with us tomorrow to talk about this. But we do obviously want to address the multiple explosions, the fire and the smoke reported at this Texas chemical plant, which they evacuated. They were ready for in some sense, but it was a plant that was left without power, and then there were explosions, and they're worrying about more problems as temperatures rise.
It could get a lot worse,
and those compounds become more volatile and dangerous. Obviously,
this is terrible. You know, you can only imagine what it's like to know that you have this ticking time bomb, and not that it may go off, but that it will go off. You know, is it? Now, the thing that is so relevant to us here at WAMC is we have generators at all of our transmitters, right? Or most of them. I can't tell you how many times those generators have failed. You know, you assume that that's why they're there, because you have an electrical failure. But something goes wrong and our heroic Stacy or Jessica has to go up on the hills to climb through the snow or whatever else is going to get them going. So this is a real terror. And they knew it was going to start to explode even before there was the first fire, and it started to happen.
Right. When you figure those primary indicators of, you know, what could happen, what could go wrong, and when you're trying to figure that plan of what's going to happen in the worst-case scenario and seeing those fears come to reality, it's a really scary situation.
And, you know, Joe, think about this for a second, and I know Teresa's going to check in on this, but there are so many rules and regulations that the federal government comes up with. And you know why they come up with them? For exactly this reason. Because they can anticipate trouble, and they say, okay, then you have to have this in place and this in place. And Trump comes along and imperiously waves his hand and says, too many regulations, and then you get this.
Right. And when you look at the situation where nothing has gone wrong, you know, it's like basically out of sight, out of mind. But when things happen like this, it really brings up the need for regulations like, you know, what we have in place.
I know somebody who leaves her key in her car all the time. And she always says to me, I say, what are you doing? Somebody's going to come along and take your car. Says, it's never happened yet.
Right.
Teresa?
Who would do that?
Is that a confession?
No, it's absolutely not. No, I am incredulously like, who would do that? But the interesting thing is there's a lot of focus on this one chemical plant as well. There should be. And it's a tremendous problem because the plant, those who run the plant say there's absolutely nothing they can do about it, as you said. You just have to wait for it to unfold because there's no refrigeration and the chemicals are volatile and they're going to explode and they have to move people.
And you can evacuate it, right?
Well, they've evacuated the plant.
But you can't evacuate the chemicals that are going over the air.
No. You evacuate the plant. You evacuate people in a 2-mile radius, and then it's just going to burn and explode. But the thing that I'm fascinated by is that remember that this area of Texas is really the center of a huge chemical industry,
yes, right,
a petrochemical industry, and oil and gas. And so while today we're focused on this one plant because of the seriousness of it, there's all sorts of environmental challenges in that region that are going to go on for a very long time. And you have state that doesn't have a strong environmental focus, and you have now an EPA that's tremendously weakened. You have the president who's rolled back a number of these rules and regulations, and that's why we're talking in the break about Judith, because she can get into more detail on this. But typically, you would have the EPA come in and help to deal with the situation. But what do you do now when you've gutted the EPA and you don't have the rules in place? How do you handle that? It's going to put a lot of lives at risk and create long-term damage.
I have no idea how a person can get up in the White House in the morning and think about the destruction that he's causing. Is it that he's either stupid because he doesn't know what the import of what he's doing is, or is it that he's cynical because he doesn't care what it does, or what is it that could create this kind of havoc? I keep shaking my head. Look, there are all kinds of people in this world.
I think greed helps.
And being in the bubble as well.
Yeah.
You think so?
Well, I think that there've been a lot of cheerleading in the last couple of months about all of these rules and regulations. You know, we're getting rid of these rules and regulations, and because of all of his tweets and such, there hasn't been a lot of focus on the details of what those rules and regulations are that he's getting rid of. But I think now, as these situations occur, for instance, you know, we talked about it before when he stood up at Trump Tower and said that he was getting rid of the regulations to make it easier to build. Well, one of the things that he rescinded was Obama-era rules that came out in the wake of Katrina and Sandy to deal with building in floodplains and to have tighter, more rules. There was bipartisan agreement on these, but he rescinded those. They're gone now. And so I think that will there then be a backlash against that over time, because we see we need them? But in the meantime, you have these serious problems with this chemical plant. The other problem with the chemical plant, besides the immediate environmental hazard, is the fact that this, you're going to have a supply chain problem now, because this chemical plant makes some of the basic components of a lot of the things that we use every day and don't think about.
Like what?
They make some things that are made out of plastics. They were talking about various component parts for machinery and plastics and other things because of these chemicals are needed for. So you take this major supplier of that offline, and you have a supply chain problem, meaning you know it's going to affect things down the line.
And we said yesterday that also you got the oil production in the United States that's affected by all of this.
Right, because this is Port Charles. So when the hurricane hit the third time, when it, you know, went back out to sea, gained strength, and came back in and hit Port Charles, which is closer to New Orleans, it hit one of the largest, I think it is the largest oil refinery in the country, if not the world. And so that's why you're seeing a spike in at the pump.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm sure you're right that is why you're seeing it. But then there's always, okay, well, it might cost us a penny more, so why don't we charge 3 cents more?
Well, that actually is an interesting question, because they had been saying that there was a glut of refined oil.
Yeah.
And that's why the prices were down so
right,
low.
Right, so this might balance things out in that way.
So how come they spiked the prices so quickly?
Right.
What? Because they can.
Mm-hmm. Because I love the way you just said that, Teresa, because they can.
Right.
Flooding and rain in this areas of Houston topping 47 inches, pounded 50 counties in southeast and lower central Texas with a combined population of roughly 11 million people. Again, fourth largest city in the United States. The area includes more than 300 towns and smaller cities that felt the storm's punishing force, even as Harvey was downgraded to a tropical depression on Wednesday. And even though the rain has stopped, it has been downgraded, there's still many, many question marks as to flooding because of the reservoirs, because of the day. So if you release the reservoir, then where do you put that?
Right.
And that's the problem. You know, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, to take care of all of the people who are still are still in shelters as you start to move them and hopefully to a place that is safe.
Joe, I wanted to read a real fast letter from Allison, who says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I freely admit that I have acquired an addiction this summer to the Roundtable panel. You have all been a tremendous comfort to me as I seek assurance that I am not alone in my angst in this turbulent and at times unbelievable political environment. I am exceedingly grateful for your service goes on. But then the last paragraph says, I return to work at school tomorrow. I will truly miss hearing you all. Thank God for the podcast, which will help to keep me sane. Many thanks. Carry on and shalom to you all. That's from Allison in Peru, where everybody has a yakka.
That's very...
Can I say thank you for being a teacher?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
Thank you for your service.
Teacher.
Going back to work tomorrow. And yes, you, of course, if you miss the show during the day, you can find it on the app, which you can easily download. You can just go to WAMC.org, and we'll have the places that will point you into the right direction.
Or you can listen in the app.
Yeah.
Not only the podcast, but you can listen directly, right. Real time.
Yeah.
On the app.
You just have to download it, though.
You have to download
it. But not while you're teaching.
But not
you
while
could.
You're teaching.
You could.
You could play it for your students, say, now listen to this.
Her problem seemed to be she had to do the podcast, right?
Yes. And you assume she's a teacher. She could be a student. She said return to school.
Oh, I thought she said return to teaching. I'm sorry. Maybe she's a student. I missed that. I thought she was a teacher.
Well, whatever the case may be, we'll be back in about a minute and 48 seconds as we take a break and go over to the BBC. We'll continue talking about these and other issues right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, and Teresa Bourgeois with us, and we welcome you as part of the panel as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you on the topics of the day. As you look at the storm, we are now... several days into this, and Joe, what do you make of the response and ultimately the politics that come out of it?
Well, you know, as we all know, one of the things that we always look at when we have a major storm, a major disaster, is obviously the political response to that, and you know how leaders at the local level, the state level, the federal level respond to that. It can make or break a presidency, a governorship, a mayoralty. And you know, this is a real test for this president. It's also a real test for the governor of Texas, who just came in a couple of years ago, whether or not they can actually recover. And that this one of the things where, even though we're days after it, it's going to be years of recovery. It's going to be years of lobbying, soliciting, you know, funds on the federal level, and really figuring that plan together. So I think it's a little still too early to say what they're doing. Obviously, the optics of having Trump and the First Lady down in Texas earlier this week. Obviously, the issue with even just the look of the part of disaster optics. And, you know, I think one of the things that people have been harping on is, you know, when you have the First Lady going with stiletto heels to a disaster zone. And that seems kind of erroneous. That might be the focus, but that it can really make
a difference. I don't know my fashion. When do you wear the stiletto heel? Where does that?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to
Is it after Labor Day?
Right.
I don't know.
When do you wear yours?
Only if they're red and really high. I just, frankly, I just thought that the attack on Melania Trump for the stiletto heel was such, you know, all I could think of is those senior citizens being pulled out in wheelchairs with no shoes.
Right.
The children walking through the mud and the grit and the chemicals in the water with no shoes.
Right.
Get focused, America. You know, I don't care what shoes Melania is or isn't wearing. What I care about is, are they going to reauthorize the National Flood Insurance Program? Are they going to raise the debt limit and then still figure out, you know, I don't care.
The real issues of it, right. Right.
People went crazy about the shoes. I care about the little kids
with
no
shoes. Okay, so tell me this. Riddle me this, Riddler. You got, let's take four editors from major newspapers around America, and now give them a sort of a Rorschach test. Ask each of them, not a Rorschach, give them a choice.
They're going to do the shoe story because of the clicks.
Right.
get over it. Stop it. People are drowning. You have a finite.
Well,
I'm
but
sorry,
they're doing that.
You.
No. But they're doing that too. I think that the stilettos have some resonance because it shows the insensitivity of this president and his wife, and maybe, by the way, a little anger by her, as you may remember, pushing his hand away when he tried to hold her hand back coming off the plane the last time. I'm just simply saying that this goes to the character of the president more than anything else.
Okay. I don't disagree with you that she shouldn't have worn stilettos and that before she walked out the door, some staff person should have said...
Well, they did.
Right.
They did. She changed from the stilettos into the sneakers.
Yeah, but before she
down.
Walked out of the White House, somebody should have turned to her and said, you know, Joe, you do events.
Right.
If you were with her, if I was with her,
right.
I would have said, excuse me, ma'am.
Right. You stop her right before she even goes
let's
outside.
Let's not do this.
Right.
Yeah,
let's not
do this. Maybe then that would be your last day on the job, especially
Whatever.
With this guy.
But then
right.
I would have been doing my job the right way.
Right.
But again, even now, right now, we're talking about her shoes as opposed to whatever. I think the optics of his event... I found troubling, but then if that made the people down there happy, so
well,
be it.
Well, what did he say? He said, what a good crowd
what
we've
a good
got
crowd.
Here. That's more important than why he's there.
There just seemed to be no empathy. There just seemed to be no empathy at all. And he just, when he was sitting around the table, I watched that twice because I'm an event person, and I thought, oh, my God. But I will say Brock Long... He really rescued him. His FEMA guy just took over that.
Who seems to be doing
a
masterful job in communications, at least,
right.
If not more, of when he is on, of in control and talking about what is being done. And also seems to have the respect of both local and state officials.
Right. Because he's been doing this for, I believe, Alabama. Is that right? He's from Alabama.
Yeah.
He's been in this for a while.
Joe, we got a letter. It's interesting because I know you want to go there. From Jeremy, comment on donation to Hurricane Harvey relief. Yesterday, I gladly made a significant donation through WMC to support relief for the victims of Hurricane Harvey. However, I cannot help but recall the fact that the Texas congressional delegation declined to support relief for victims of Hurricane Sandy in the Northeast. With that in mind, I decided to make a donation of the same amount to the Texas Democratic Party in hopes that the next time there is a disaster in our part of the country, our friends in Texas will be more supportive. I encourage others to consider doing the same, and that's from Jeremy.
I just love that, Jeremy. I was about to say, well, when they go low, we go high.
Right.
But what a great idea. So if you're frustrated.
Yeah.
I
agree, though. We got a lot of comments yesterday about that.
When they
that.
Go low, and, we go high.
Well, no. Yeah. I mean, a lot of comments about why should we do this if you know, they didn't do that for us or for Sandy. And I don't know. I think you move on from those other points and you do what's right.
You know, Joe, you're right. We did get a lot of comments. But it was interesting. Most of those comments came with a check. Most of those comments came, all of them. Nobody
would
have been calling otherwise.
Right, yeah.
And they're saying, you know, I'm doing this, but I'm not forgetting.
Well, the New York delegation, I think, I don't know if to a person, Joe, you might know this better than me, but a number have come out and said, we're going to do the right thing here.
Right, but they're still giving that extra stab to Cruz, basically saying, well, you know, you didn't do this for it, but we're still going to do it for you. But just remember what happened 5 years ago still.
Well, the interesting thing legislatively, I mean, there is a real legislative logjam that has to be dealt with in the next 4 weeks. And it centers around all of these funding issues. So they need to pass budgets or a continuing resolution. There's internal Republican fights about that. The National Flood Insurance Program, as I mentioned, needs to be reauthorized. It's being held up by internal fights. One of the side factors is that Congressman Scalise, the congressman who was shot, he's one of the leads on that. And the Child Health Plus health care for 8 million children around the country needs to be reauthorized. And then they need to raise the debt limit, which has always been a challenge for Republicans. All of these get at that same financial back and forth that the Sandy relief did.
Okay, so now let's talk about what happens here. In previous administrations, you would be sure, right, Joe, that the White House would be heavily involved in these negotiations.
Right.
And I think they probably will still try to inject themselves. But I suspect more and more we're going to see the Republicans in both houses and to some degree making common cause with the Democrats, because this is a tough time. And they will be saying, okay, we're going to come up with a bill and we are going to plunk it right down on the president's desk. And just as they have done before with the Russian stuff. So I think that's going to be the new look. I predict that. Which is that he doesn't get to come into the White House. He doesn't get to come into the Congress and say, no, you can't do this, because at this stage of the game, they know if they screw up the federal debt limit and the country, they know from Newt Gingrich what's going to happen to them.
But they've been internally divided on this for a long time.
Right.
And Joe, you're an event person. So the Missouri rally last night yesterday the president went to, the tax unveiling. I mean, should they have done that, or should have they done something that I thought they would have stayed in D.C. and focused on, we need to get some of these things
conventional
done.
Wisdom would have denoted staying in D.C., but given his tone of his presidency so far in these first 8 months, Missouri is not out of the playbook for him.
I agree with Joe. Yeah. I agree with Joe, and especially because I think he makes an assessment, as he always does. He puts his hand, he puts some spittle on his hand, he puts it up in the wind, he sees which way the wind is blowing, and he says, okay, how many people in this country really know about those five things that Teresa just laid on the table for us? The answer is almost no one. Where will I make a greater impact? Down there or in the White House doing my job? Barack Obama would have been doing his job, but I don't think this guy thinks that way.
But the problem is now he's layered in pressure to move a tax bill, which they don't have a tax bill, nor do they have the funding to get one, nor do they have internal Republican consensus.
And what's right. So interesting about this, Joe, Teresa, help me with this, but isn't he going down the exact same path he went down with health care?
Exactly.
He is. He absolutely is.
Saying, I don't have any idea what this bill is, but it's going to be a great bill. And he's saying that, and now he's going to put it on the Congress that they didn't do it.
No, he still needs a big win for the year, and if they can figure a win for
anything.
Anything. And you've gone this long with nothing. This is really your last hurrah for your one.
And they, by the way, they're taking a ton of television advertising. It's all over. You can't turn the television on without seeing how some guy in a blue collar, how his life is going to be changed because they're going to give money to the rich through this bill. They don't say that, but that's what they're doing.
No.
Right. Well, the thing is that the White House, the Trump administration, has said that they were going to put together a bill. They've been saying that this is one on health care. They didn't, but on this they did. But they have no bill. And yesterday was what I call a cotton candy event. You know, it looks really good, but once you start eating it, it's all fluff.
Where is it? Right. Where's stick?
Right. Yeah. No, they're there.
Well, that goes back to your original point that I was going to ask you when you were talking about and asking Joe about going there. I mean, I understand what Alan is saying about the, it's easier for the base. But at some point, it would have made more sense if you actually had something, right? If you actually had something to talk about and had a bill.
Yeah, it would make more sense, but he didn't have it.
They don't. But see, this is the problem. They did this for 7 years on health care, and they got away with it. Repeal and replace, repeal and replace, repeal and replace. But they were never held to account for what the replacement would be. And when push came to shove, they didn't have a viable replacement that the Republicans could rally around. They're now talking a tax bill. Their rhetoric does not match the content which they claim they're going to have. They're not putting a bill on the table. If they're so proud of this tax bill, put it on the table, hold hearings, let's see what's in it. Because I will bet you it doesn't match the rhetoric that they gave yesterday. But they have a bigger problem. Where are they going to get the money? They were going to get the money from the health bill, which they didn't pass. Now, that pre-Harvey, they already had a huge economic problem with these various bills that they're backlogged that needed to be done before the end of September. And now you have to layer on billions and billions of relief for Harvey. They've got to figure that out. They've got to legislate. And that's what they've not done so far.
Well, let me ask you this question, Teresa. No, if they had done tax reform first, then health care, do you think then you know, tax reform would have had a better chance a few months ago, and therefore the spirit of goodwill and bipartisanship, or do you think we would still be in the same situation that we are in right now?
They couldn't do tax reform first. There's complex legislative rules that they couldn't, but most importantly, they wanted to pass the tax bill to free up the funds to, they wanted to pass the health care bill to free up the money that they would then use to fund their tax cuts. And so the reason they don't have a tax bill yet is because they couldn't get health care done. They don't have that money, so they have to go back to the drawing board to figure out how to fund their tax bill. But they couldn't do taxes first.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we've got some letters. We'll do those, and we'll move on to other topics as well. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, and Teresa Bourgeois making up the panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, and we've got a lot to get to. I just want to get something. I would just like to say something before we move on. You know, we are very, very lucky as a program and as a station to have a wonderful, wonderful employee by the name of Sarah LaDuke, who is the producer of this program, the sole producer of this program. And she has been with me since I started hosting by myself. She's been there since the very, very beginning. And it has been just a delight working with her. She is an absolute wonder.
A joy.
An absolute joy.
The best.
Well, if you, and because God knows it's no joy working with me. So, hey, well, she's going to have great joy in her life because she's getting married on Sunday. She is getting married on Sunday. So I would just like, on behalf of the program, on behalf of our listeners, and on behalf of everyone, just to congratulate Sarah and to her beautiful, wonderful husband-to-be, Paul Gallo, who will be wed on Sunday, a wonderful way to celebrate the weekend. And she's not going to be here. She's going to obviously be taking a few days off for her wedding.
No.
So before I know, I know she actually got that through. And I just want to congratulate her and congratulate Paul. Wish them all the love and joy that they so richly deserve.
That is fantastic.
Wonderful, wonderful people.
You're not kidding.
We just love her to death.
Didn't she have a wonderful way that they got engaged?
They got engaged on the stage, on the set of Hamilton with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I mean, wow.
So to Paul made it hard for every other human being proposing. Like, how do you beat that?
You don't top that.
How do you top that? So anyway, I just wanted to congratulate all of them and thank you. And thanks to her, and hopefully they have a beautiful, well, obviously they'll have a beautiful, wonderful day and a beautiful, wonderful life together. Okay, so let's move on to other stuff, and we move on to talking about, let's do letters, right?
A couple
let's do
of letters, letters.
And
Here
then
we
we'll move on to the other topics.
Angela says, Teresa, did you see the picture of the midwife riding an inflatable swan through the floodwaters to go deliver a baby? Talk about uplifting, and that's from Angela.
I didn't see that one, but boy, I tell you, it's been a very difficult couple of months about, the heart and soul of America, but is in this tragedy, we have been reminded about the heart and soul of America. People, as Sandra Bullock said when she donated $1 million yesterday to the relief, she said, in 8 feet of water, there are no Democrats or Republicans, they're just Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And people just going to incredible lengths to help other people, whether they're pulling, the Coast Guard, just regular folks getting in their boats, getting people out. It's been amazing.
But for every beautiful story, there's also tragedy. As we looked this morning,
are you not talking to me?
Sarah. Sarah just walked in. Sorry.
As we looked at it this morning, there were 25 people dead, and I'm sure it's going to go much higher than that. But the story that is still haunting me.
I know what you're going to say
about the lady who saves her child as any of us would, I hope. And the child is alive and the mother is dead. What a story. Oh, boy.
And they followed her floating. Oh, I don't even talk about it. It was horrible. Just horrible. But it just so many uplifting stories. And the mattress, on a positive note, the mattress guy. Have you heard this business guy?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
This guy who owns a series of high-end furniture stores and has a huge furniture warehouse, and he was watching and heard somebody say, you know, I have nothing. Where am I going to go? I don't know where to go. They just pulled his family off of a boat. And he said, I know where they're going to go. And he opened up his two mattress stores and sent his driver out in the truck to just go find people. He found people who were walking along the roads or stuck, you know, in a highway overpass, and put them in the truck and brought them. And then when those two stores filled up, he opened up his warehouse and now has about 400 or 500 people.
I went to see Sting last night at SPAC. I know he was at Tanglewood the night before, and he said he got quiet for a moment, and then he said, a man who persists in his folly, it was quoting William Blake, will become wise. One day we will all wake up and be a lot wiser than we are today. And then he said, although I look at what's happening in Houston, and I look that we get out of the Paris Climate Accord, I look that we're eviscerating the EPA, NASA, and I wonder just how wise we're getting.
Right. Well, you figure it's really the sheerness of humanity, the ugliness, but also the beauty of it. And we're seeing that, you know, every day, every minute.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's one thing that's interesting to me, and it's making the news a little bit more, but in Mumbai in South Asia, they're having terrible historic rains and floods, and over 1,200 people dead in India and in Southeast Asia, and thousands of people homeless, you know, probably countless others drowned. 2 weeks ago, Sierra Leone, incredible rains, over 1,000 people dead. They've stopped counting. They're buried in mudslides. And, you know, all of this, probably climate change. But the other that they all have in common was the places in which they built. They cut in Sierra Leone, they had overbuilt and cut down trees. In Mumbai, they've had a sprawl and they didn't have the infrastructure, you know, to deal with the water. Certainly in Texas, you see that they took away the marshlands. They, you know, built on these places. So people really need to step back and look at.
Yeah, and the question then becomes, where are we gonna put everybody? The average age of death is getting higher and higher, and we know that when we put China did to you know, a single person replacement on the table, they had to change it because they need younger people to carry the system. We need that here too for Social Security and other things. But then the question is, where is everybody going to go? It seems to me that zero population growth knew what they were doing, but, you know, back in the day when we heard so much from them, but it's very complicated.
Well, I mean, I think that if you have unregulated construction and if you build in each of these cases, building in swampland, taking down trees, you just have to remember the nature of things and that there are some places that you shouldn't be building.
Right. You can't just keep on building and building without consequence, you know, for better or for worse.
You have to decide where you're going to build.
Do you think there are too many people on the earth?
Yes.
Of course there are.
Yeah.
It's going to get more and more and more. So then we have to decide. You get out of Manhattan now and you see these pencil buildings rising to the 50th floor or whatever they're doing. So you got to find one dry piece of land and say, okay, everybody lives here. And then when you get everybody living there, you get the mayor and the governor saying, too many people, after everybody's been approved, too many people living in Manhattan. That's a good one, all right. Got a couple of letters?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Hi, panel. We gave yesterday because we're not an OTE capital like them, Jerry from Gilliland. Mike says, I think we're finally seeing what Trump's art of the deal is bully and intimidate. How's that working for him? I don't know yet. He's still the president of the United States.
And he got to be president of the United States.
Elizabeth says, panel, I'm thrilled to see that so many people are helping each other out in Houston. That is how it should be. I'm thrilled that the news is giving so much press to these Good Samaritans. However, I'm distressed that each time this happens in our country, we say that it is a result of being from a particular state as opposed to it being the American way. Okay, and then it goes on for quite a while. Joe, how many words or characters do you want in these?
150. Yeah. Wait, no, what is it on Twitter?
140 characters.
140, yeah. 140.
Hi, panelists.
Hello.
Hi. Hey.
With all the funds and the programs that are being have been cut, there's going to be much less assistance for the poor in Houston and other affected areas. Sort of makes the sting greater when one remembers Trump's campaign question, what do you have to lose? I've thought about that so many times. You know, he addressed people of color and he said, what do you have to lose? Well, we're certainly finding out what everybody had to lose. He said to the gay community, I'm going to be the greatest champion, you know, you've ever had. And now he's kicking people out of the military and everything else, and transgender people, folks, and everything else. It's just unbelievable. You say one thing and it has nothing to do with reality whatsoever. It's amazing.
Interesting that Mattis reversed him yesterday. Well, now they're saying he didn't reverse, but he certainly slowed things down. So you always talk about, are the generals in charge, Alan? What did you think? I don't know if you...
Well, I think the whole thing's a game, to be honest with you. In other words, I think this is classic good cop, bad cop. The bad cop, Trump, says, kick him out or whatever, and the other guy comes along. And that's been going on from day to day to day, depending on which cabinet office you're. So the word is out. Somebody got the memo from the Rexograph machine. Remember Rexograph? Anyway, or Mimeograph? Somebody got the memo, which says, this is the way we're going to do it. I'll say one thing, you say the opposite, we'll confuse them.
But it depends on who it is, because a general, you know, he'll respond to, but if it's someone like Sean Spicer, he didn't respond so well to that.
Well, that's right. That's right. No question. Okay.
All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue. We have letters, we have more conversation, more stories to discuss. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. No? ORG. Thank you. It used to be an old radio station I work with, Ray. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. So let's go to some letters and then we'll move on to other topics. Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Teresa Bourgeois, all here. And here we go.
I don't really know what you were asking for, Joe. My ears are not that good, as you know. So I didn't know if you were asking for letters or lettuce. Lettuce I don't have. Letters I do. Here we go.
Excellent.
Yes, we'll go with the letters for this point.
Okay, here we go. Hi, panel.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm sorry, but I feel the stilettos are indicative of the first family state of mind. It reminds me of Trump handing down packages from a truck during the first election, wearing black shoes, suit coat, and French cuffs. One doesn't wear cufflinks when helping flood victims. It's just not done. Thanks. From Richard in Corinth.
It's just not done.
All right. Go help.
I'm with him. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Is there any evidence that any of Trump's EPA changes are responsible for today's explosions? And that's from Kathy.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, I don't think so.
No. But
I think it's important, because I think when you lessen, and we'll talk to Judith Hank about this tomorrow, lessen the demands you make on people, and you have a president who says, okay, these are all unnecessary, it turns out that they are necessary and, in fact, not even sufficient.
As best I understand it, Judith is the right person, but as best I understand this particular situation, these are volatile chemicals. They need to be kept at a certain temperature.
Correct.
They need to be cold. The refrigeration is no longer working. So when they warm up and when they're mixed with water, then you have these explosions. And right. So it's because right. They lost their refrigeration. Now, what happens next, as they explode, as these toxins go into the air, or they're now claiming it won't be toxic, it's just it's acrid but not toxic, whatever. That's where the EPA comes in. What's going to happen with these facilities? What's going to happen with these chemicals? Mm. Are there spills into the air? Is there going to be ground contamination? So on and so forth. That's where the EPA
And how long will it take before we find out what actually the consequences,
of this thing are?
And, you know, I've always taught my students that every bad thing that happens is followed by a new rule change. As I've always used on this show, so in American Airlines, when they tell you, be sure that the luggage hasn't jiggled around in the compartment above you, it's because somebody had a suitcase fall on their heads. So this should indicate, for example, we see the pipeline, right, guys, in going through Massachusetts parks and lands. And you say, okay, now, is there ever a time within the next 1,000 years, in other words, next year, that this pipeline is going to explode? No, not possible. Right. It is not possible. We know that. But then nothing else that we've been seeing is possible. So you can't anticipate everything, but you sure can when you have a box car or a tanker car filled with explodable or fire-ridden oil come to downtown Albany. You say, hey, someday this thing is going to happen. It's going to happen. It's happened in other places. It's pretty easy.
Well, one of the things that they're saying is, you know, we're fine at post-disaster response. We're not so good at mitigation.
Right. And prevention at that point.
Right. The other thing, I mean, there is going to be a whole series of complicated things unfolding here where the federal government usually would step in. It'll be interesting to see what happens under this administration. You know, you have all sorts of pollution issues. Judith is the one to talk about those. But there are a whole range of health issues now that are about to unfold because of this dirty water and such. And then there's housing issues. HUD has been depleted. How are you going to deal with the housing issues?
Sure.
And then basic infrastructure. You know, they've lost a lot of their basic infrastructure, water, sewers, that kind of thing.
So we don't know. And certainly, look, America takes certain pills. Almost everybody takes them. The statins, for example. I've had somebody on Medical Monday who said, a doctor who said that if she had her way, we'd put it in the water.
Right.
We put it in the water. Okay. And then they find out that statins have some consequences to them.
Very complex consequences.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Here we go from Dan. Sexist BS. Oh, it says shoes, ? Sexist BS. Stop it. What kind of shoes did the Donald have on? Sad.
I'm just so offended by the whole shoe thing.
I know. It's ridiculous. But he had boots on, though.
And by the way, he did have boots. By the way, I'm not. Jeremy says, yes. Oh, comment on donation to Hurricane Harvey relief. We did this one, right? This one came up before. Remember, same amount of money to the Democratic Party in Texas. That's right. And Pete says, Trump in a bubble. No matter what disaster happens, Trump has a way to run safely with family and friends. Everyday Americans won't have that capacity. You don't have to care unless you believe we're all in this together. And that's Pete from Poughkeepsie.
Well, he's up against some pretty hard deadlines in the next 4 weeks, so we'll see his capacity to govern.
All right, let's move on to some other topics and talk about the anti-sanctuary law that was blocked yesterday. Federal judge in Texas has temporarily blocked parts of a several-state immigration law that was supposed to take effect Friday, otherwise known as tomorrow, and would have outlawed sanctuary cities and penalized local officials who do not cooperate with federal deportation efforts.
Now, we should remember this is a Clinton-appointed judge. And we do know that the next level is a conservative court. The appeals court is a conservative court. So whether this is largely symbolic, whether it'll hold up, he made some very substantive arguments in his decision, 95 pages, I believe. That's a pretty big decision. Maybe he's hoping that the old conservative judges won't be able to read the whole thing or not. In any case, that was a little sardonic. I apologize. So we have something at least on the table. I have a feeling when you get to the Supreme Court of the United States on this one, it's going to go for Trump.
I would tend to agree with that. I think more or less you look at this as another example of, you know, the climate in the environment that we're in. And, you know, certainly it would be interesting to see what the next step will be. I know the governor of Texas, you know, outside of obviously all the situations he's going through right now with Harvey, you know, he made some comments that obviously he was disappointed by the decision.
Standing right next to, side by side in this recovery with the police chief of Houston and the mayor of Houston, who were on the opposite side of the issue, right, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know one of the things that did come up during the Harvey and is still ongoing issue is the fear of people that to come try to get help because fear,
yeah,
of being deported.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's a very tough one. What would you do? Would you call 911 if you and your family were drowning, if you thought that by calling that number, you would potentially risk deportation? Boy, is that tough.
And the question is, that might be happening right now as it stands.
Sure.
When you look at, and obviously, but do we see a pattern? I mean, you mentioned obviously the appointment of this particular judge, but we see a pattern of these immigration cases, and as they move toward the courts, you wonder, by going back, do they become stronger? I mean, we saw this with the immigration.
Who becomes stronger? I'm sorry.
When they go back to, yeah, work on the legislation, does that legislation become stronger to be able to sort of battle the courts in the future?
Well, it has to be. I mean, you have to figure that strategy moving forward for them. So for them, they have to figure that alternative route to get what they want. But, you know, we will see what happens next.
No, it's so interesting to me that you have a huge Hispanic population in the United States. I believe we read earlier this year that within a certain amount of time, it was going to be the majority in the United States, or it's going to be the largest subgroup in the United States, the Hispanic population. Now, you got to be rolling the dice somehow as a politician to figure that, would I rather throw some red meat to the base, or would I rather risk never having another Hispanic vote for me?
Right. And you look at especially a place like Texas where, you know, that is it's shifting in that direction.
It is.
Absolutely.
But also the thing separate from the legal issues, I'd be interested in your thoughts about just the need for workers. Because now, even before this, there was an interesting story in Bloomberg about this, planned infrastructure effort where the construction industry said that there aren't enough construction workers. And now you have this push to make people go underground or leave or whatever. And you saw it in Saratoga, New York, around the racing season, where their restaurants were cleared out, the track had trouble getting people. But now you're down in Texas, you're down in South Texas. You're going to need a huge influx of people to do reconstruction and such. And a lot of people are going to flee because they don't have homes. What if you need this migrant or immigrant population to help? What are they going to do?
Right. And I think that's where you certainly see the disconnect between ideology and reality. The reality is that they're going to need workers for these different projects and jobs.
Rebuilding.
And rebuilding, certainly. And that's where the situation is. You know, what's more important to the employer and the economy down there.
So let me tap into your expertise in this, Joe. You have worked with many high-level Hispanic organizations and caucuses. So what do you think that issue? What do you think the likelihood of moving these issues forward? And if nothing else, getting the American people to understand the importance of this community and these issues?
Well, I think, you know, the framing and as you're starting to see a lot of these other issues start to percolate and amplify, and most certainly issues that face the Hispanic community, you're going to see mobilization. And I think, you know, every step is only building up to a boiling ticking time bomb in terms of what we're going to see in terms of change, certainly a political point of view and economic point of view. But it's one of those things where you keep on poking the bear almost. And, you know, how much longer will it take until, you know, you will start seeing some real changes politically that are going to be impactful?
And how does that happen? That happens when you mobilize a subpopulation. Is that, I mean, you know, Hispanic population, right. for example. You know, it seems so clear to me that the way that the Democrats ought to be going in the next election, for whatever it's worth, is to make a buddy system in which everybody pledges to bring one person over the line with them. And if it means going to Vermont and finding one person who didn't vote the last time, grabbing him by the or her by the hand, and saying, I'm going to walk you through the process so you don't have to be scared, that wins the election.
Right. And that's basic, you know, get out the vote right there in terms of really engaging a population. But it really going to come down to local community, you know, local organizations, local politicians is really get them out. As we all know, all politics is local, and we need to make sure that, you know, folks understand those issues and understand the impact that they have when they vote.
Not that I would for 1 minute say that I was either a Democrat or Republican.
Sure. Joe, what do you think the president does on DACA?
I think he doubled down. I think he certainly will continue to double down.
And again, for those who were not with us, Joe, DACA is the Obama program.
Right. I think with DACA, though, you know, there's a conflict, I think, even in the piece that the New York Times had, where there might be some empathy that he might have. But again, it's going back to talking back to the base. Does he, you know, continue to double down on the issues that he's already committed himself to the base?
And it's always important to remember, you're right, Joe, and here's a program that helps children, by the way, get ahead. But then there comes that moment, you know, when people mature, as you suggested, and then they say, what am I doing this for? Why am I doing this? It's just unbelievable.
Right.
Just flee. Well, you know, one of the things is so many people, I'm, you know, not the expert you are, Joe, in this, but it seems to me there's been such an effort to try to get legal status, but that has been, it's a slow, slow process, and a lot of people are here in limbo, en route to a process, but now the Trump administration is reducing the numbers of people who can get citizenship, exacerbating the problem. Right?
Right. And it's one of those situations where it's a long, drawn out, it's expensive process. And, you know, you also have a lot of situations where not even for DACA, but also for, you know, folks who are coming in from other countries where it's a tough process to understand. And you hope that you're working with folks that have your interests in the right place.
We have letters.
A couple of letters. Okay. Hi, panel.
Oh, hey. Hello.
And Alejo takes me to great task. I just heard the discussion about the overpopulation problem. I'm a little sad to hear someone like Alan talk about this topic in a manner that he did. Overpopulation is a myth. What we have is over-concentration problem, like what we saw in Houston. Instead of using all the land in the Midwest for pasture, we could use it to live on, instead of creating concrete jungles, and that's best for Malejo. Linda says,
A sprawl problem in Houston. They were allowed to build, and they built out into this marshland, grassland, sure. And that's a lot of the places that are underwater in this sprawl area. Read the ProPublica series on this.
Yeah, New Orleans too, right?
Yeah, same problem.
And okay. Also, just on overpopulation in general, you should read Bill McKibben's work on this, which is also pretty incredible of talking about its link to climate change.
Sure. And Linda says, hi, panel. New York Times reported Melania wore stilettos to enter the plane but took them off and left the plane wearing tennis shoes and casual clothes. Actually, the clothes, I believe, were the same. I was paying careful attention to this. But the tennis shoes, she did put...
So she had somebody, lovely tennis shoes.
So somebody said, get those stilettos off on the flight over there. And then comes to an interesting conclusion. Melania has more sense and class than her husband. Well, first of all, I wouldn't disagree with that. But second of all, how do we know who told who what? Right? In other words, did somebody tell her to get the stilettos off, or did she tell the husband, I'm not going to wear these stupid stilettos, I'm going to put my white sneakers on?
Again. Who cares?
Right.
Well, no.
People are dying.
I know.
People care.
I care.
I just, this one okay. bothers me. I care.
So a different Linda this time writes to us and says, zoning. I understand that Texas doesn't have any zoning laws so that these chemical plants can be located in residential neighborhoods. It is illegal to mandate safety regulations such as sprinklers, et cetera. Now, I didn't know that Texas doesn't have any zoning laws. Does any? Well, this is above our pay grade, I think.
Well, again, I know what I know just from reading this ProPublica series, and it talked about how they have very lax zoning rules. And one of the reasons that there was this excessive sprawl into these particular areas, into this grassland, is because they were allowed to do it. And people warned them that this is going to be a problem, but they were allowed to do it.
We have 2 minutes, and I would like to get to at least Alan's reaction to the Bob Mueller, Eric Schneiderman story.
It's a terrific story. And what's happening here is that Eric Schneiderman, who's the AG, otherwise known as Attorney General to others, almost governor because our AGs run for governor next, but still virtually unknown, is cooperating with Bob Mueller, the special counsel. And he is thinking, if what we read is true, of indicting people like Paul Manafort. Now, the president, here's why it's interesting, because the president of the United States apparently has the ability to pardon any federal crime, but not state crimes. So therefore, Manafort may be resting pretty up until now because he thinks that if things really get bad, as in he's a good man from the president, then he'll get pardoned. The signal, wink, wink, he'll get pardoned. But if the AG goes into it. And the last thing about that, Joe, is the attorney general, of course, now, if he does this, is going to be one of the best known men, not only in the state, but the world.
Was this Mueller's response to the Arpaio pardon, do you think?
It may have been. I think that this collaboration has been going on for a while.
At least for a few weeks, right? Yeah. Right.
Okay, we're out of time. My thanks to everybody, Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, and Teresa Bourgeois. We'll be back tomorrow with another discussion. As we mentioned, Judith Henke will be with us, Aaron Pasitti, Alan, of course, and hopefully you will be with us as well. My thanks to all. We'll be back with more show right after this.